Through the Gryffindor is brought to you by Wizarding Candles. Ever wish you could bring the magic of the Wizarding World right into your home? Well, now you can with our very own collection of Wizarding Candles. We work hard to make sure that these aren't just candles. We aim to offer a brand new enchanting experience each month. All of our handcrafted candles are inspired by iconic places, spells, creatures, and relics from the magical world. Whether it's the cozy scent of the burrow or the mystical aroma of the enchanted forest, our candles transport you to the heart of the magic. The fun doesn't stop there. Hidden at the bottom of every candle is a surprise charm waiting just for you. Each charm is a unique keepsake and carefully selected to match the theme of each candle. We have new scents every single month, and you can save 10% on a subscription when you sign up at wizardingcandles.com. What's poppin', everybody? Hello and welcome to Popcorn Culture. My name is Ben Carlin and I am your host. Here with me today is my brother Jay, who will be in every episode.
I'm here. I'm back again, Ben. And I think first and foremost, we have to talk about the beer mile.
The beer mile.
Because we did it.
We did. We did. After such, like, I feel like a solid, like, 2 months of preparation and discussion, we finally found ourselves staring down the barrel at the beer mile. And correct me if I'm wrong, but you and I both all day Friday were like in a state.
I mean, absolutely. Yes. All day Friday. It was kind of at the, not even the back of my mind. It was like at the front of my mind all day, just like, oh man, it's here. The day is here. Like, I was thinking about it though, because it was a 6 o'clock race. So you had all day to think about it. I was like, what should I eat in the morning? Do I need to be careful about what I do for lunch? Like, am I going to be fueled? And it like sounds so silly because you're just running, you know, 1/4 mile.
Yeah, right. I mean, in the scheme of things, it's not even the type of thing you're going to be like sore from. It's just, you just go and you do it and it's over. But yes, there were so many like odd unknowns that I felt like kept sort of splashing upon us.
Yes.
as time went, where like this whole time we have been practicing doing our chugs with just a standard red solo cup.
Yes.
So, I mean, from the beginning of this whole conversation, we each had one here at the office where we like wrote in Sharpie on the side. We've all been using the same ones the whole time. So this is probably like the most extensively used solo cups.
Absolutely.
You know, like in the history of mankind.
And we've been filling them pretty much to the top, which is actually 18 ounces.
Yes. And yeah. And so I think like my average chug time for like the 18 ounce solo cup was maybe in the proximity of like 9 seconds. Like sometimes I could go into like the sevens, but like mostly like 8, 9, 10.
Yeah, it was usually somewhere around the 9 range. And then I was hitting somewhere around like 5.5 to 6 seconds.
Yes, yes. Yeah. So you were definitely like, you had a big lead on me on the chug front. But, you know, so that was sort of like a big one. And then like all of a sudden we got like a promo image that was just promoting the beer mile coming into like the last couple of days. And it was like from last year's event. And there you see everybody at the line all holding cans,
yes,
in the air, which was sort of like a double-edged sword, because on the one hand it was like okay, so a standard beer can is 12 ounces,
yes,
and so it's kind of like, well, we've been chugging
18
and now it's just 12, so like, I mean, that's cutting it down drastically.
Yeah.
That's a lot less fluid you got to deal with. Like, we could probably do that.
Yeah.
But drinking out of a can is a much different experience than drinking out of the cup, where you have like a bigger surface area for the pour.
Yeah. I mean, it can only flow. I mean, if you hold a can straight up, it can only flow out so fast.
Yes.
Like, there's not much you can do to make it go faster. Like, you could squeeze the can to force the liquid out a little bit faster.
Right.
Which maybe gets you like a second or so, but with only like, you know, several hours worth of notice on can chugging versus cup chugging, it wasn't like you could sit there and practice over and over, because the problem with practicing chugging is that you get very full.
You get super full. So it's like, it ends up just being this like the other issue. And then even if you wanted, like, we have like Athletic Brewing Company is like non-alcoholic beer.
Yeah.
So we took a stab at like a couple of those where it was kind of like, okay, like we can do like a, you know, because that's the other problem too, is you don't want to just be like chugging beer.
That's the other problem. You know,
it's like the drinking aspect of this entire thing is just for the challenge, not for any of the associated like libaceous feeling.
Right.
You know, it's sort of like it's a fun hurdle to introduce to a sporting event.
Yeah.
But otherwise, you know, we're not just out there just trying to like pound beers for the
for
funsies or anything. So, that was the other kind of like big thing. So like with hours to go, we're like, okay, now we're in can mode. Like now we know for sure it's going to be cans. And so that's like one big determination that sort of, I mean, I can't quite call it a wrench, but it was a reaction.
It was a reaction. Yeah. It was different than what we had prepared for. Not a huge deal, but like just a little different.
Yeah.
And then like forever on the page for it, it had said like, it didn't, I wish it had had a map of the course
from the beginning,
which it did not. But it referenced like the switchbacks of Elmwood Park. And I was like, there are no switchbacks in Elmwood Park.
Right. Yes. You know? It's like a big circle.
It's a big circle. And I'm like, I've been racking my brain for like the last 10 weeks. Like, where are they going to do this? Are they going to have to manufacture the switchbacks in some capacity, like in order to make it work?
Yeah, because otherwise the most logical thing is that the big ring that like circles the park, I would have assumed is approximately 1/4 mile.
Right.
And would then just about take you through the primary like regions of GoFest. So
yeah.
I know that it said the switchbacks, but I just kept thinking like they must just be like exaggerating a detail because there's like a like hairpin turn you have to take or whatever.
Yeah.
But no, day of, we get a map of the race.
Yes.
And if you can imagine, there is a like an amphitheater in downtown Roanoke that like lots of people will come and do like outdoor, you know, performances. And it's got like a big stage and like plenty of seating and stuff like that.
You can look it up. It's at Elmwood Park.
Yes. Yeah. And so what we discover is that we're going to be starting directly in front of the stage. The first thing you do is run upstairs.
Yeah.
And then you take a hard right turn where you then take a hard left 90 degree turn up a smaller set of staircase. And then you literally, there's like a big hill embankment.
Yes.
Which I mean, you know, picture any grassy hill.
Yeah.
Make it steeper. That's it.
That's it. So basically, yeah, the way the amphitheater is built, it's sort of built into the slope of the land.
Yes.
So like as it kind of stairs, like it has like places to sit, obviously, because you're watching the stage, and that has like regular stair step seats or whatever. But then above that is just more grassy hill. And yeah, that is where they have staked out like 4 or 5 really huge switchbacks that you're going to be running back and forth. But like, it's not, and it's like, I don't care. Like, switchbacks are fine. The issue is that it is just a grassy hill. It's not like this is a walking path where they have built switchbacks.
Right.
It is that they have just put stakes in the ground and ribbon around the stakes that are now the switchbacks that you just stay in between the lines. So if you can imagine, though, you're running on the slope of the hill, which is like 45 degrees, you know?
Yes, it's so steep.
You are like leaning over as you run.
My ankles hurt literally just like the GMA went out there and we were just jogging it.
Yeah.
And I like, you know, not at speed. We were just trying to get like a feel for what it's going to feel like, what the traction would be like and stuff like that. And it was like, oh my gosh, like this hurts just to do for funsies.
Yeah.
You know, just chatting along at conversational pace or whatever. So that ended up being like a whole new factor. And on top of the course being like on this unusual terrain, it also meant that like all the track workouts that we've been doing were basically thrown out the door because the switchbacks are all about like short-term acceleration versus like picking up and gradually doing like a big long sprint, which also, you know, kind of added to like the whimsy of the event. But then the traction, you know, you're running on like ever so slightly damp grass.
Yeah.
And so I was wearing my shoes that I ran my marathon in, which are, you know, great for running. I ran a marathon in them.
Yep.
But the bottoms of them are just about as smooth as like, you know, like the shoes I'm wearing now, which are like basketball shoes.
Yeah.
And so it's like, as I'm running, it's almost like running on sand where like you take a step and like your foot like slides a little bit, like with each step and you're
right.
Like, you know, you never really feel like you've got like good traction.
Yeah. Well, plus it was really difficult to get a huge amount of acceleration, even if you had the traction, because you're running on the diagonal, and for not very long before you had to whip it back another 180 degrees.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. So it was way, way, way more challenging, way more different than we expected. So that's the setting for everything going into the event. So the GMA gets together. We all have matching outfits.
We had matching outfits. Yes.
Really cool. Jay had like Duck in a Cup t-shirts made, and these like big, they almost remind me of like the Pit Viper glasses, but they're from the brand Gooder, which we've always been a big fan of. So they're kind of like the big single like lens. Or you know what else they reminded me a little bit of is Max's glasses from a Goofy movie.
Oh, like at the beginning.
Yes. When he's doing like the, who's
Stand
the
out above the crown.
Yeah.
Powerline.
Yeah. That's the one. So kind of like that. And then we had like rubber duck like ball caps that we were all wearing, which was super fun. So we're all decked out, we're all matching.
Ducked out.
Yeah, nailed it.
Thank you.
We get over there, we get to the registration table first. So we're group number one. So we have like race numbers with the number one on them, which was kind of like, you know, good omen.
Yeah, yeah. Felt good.
Yeah, like, this is gonna be great. You know, we find out, there is an alcoholic beer and a non-alcoholic beer option. You have to go over, chug your whole beer, turn the beer upside down over your head to prove that it's empty. And if you leave any in there, the idea is that then it's going to pour on your head. And that's sort of like your punishment for
not finishing the beer.
For not finishing it. You throw your beer into the trash can and or the recycling can, and then you immediately go sprinting up the staircase. So we lead off with GMA member Mike.
Yes.
Who has a splendid chug.
And he did good. He was out. I think he left second.
Yes, left second. Did he hold second?
He held second, yeah.
Yes. And so he goes, you know, through the whole thing, comes rip roaring in, tags you in. You go over and have a lightning chug.
Dude, I had a great chug. I was in the zone. Like Big Steve came up to me after. He was like, "Dude, your chug was insane." I was like, "I don't know what I did." You know, I was just like,
I was feeling it.
I was just holding the can and letting it go. And maybe the person next to me just wasn't ready. Maybe our training did pay off.
Maybe it did.
Yeah. Of course, there was only one person in front of me because Mike had done a good job staying with them. And so I finished mine. I cannot believe it that I passed the person in front of me on the chug.
Yeah.
And so I take off up the stairs. And I round the corner and I'm starting to make my way to the switchbacks. And it's like going through my head that like, oh my gosh, I'm in the lead. Like, oh man, this is crazy. What do I do? You know?
Right.
Like I really got to try and hold on to it. And like, as I'm thinking that, the guy behind me just comes flying past like at full speed. And I was like, there was like 1 second of like, okay, let me try and speed up and catch up with him. And then it was like, there's no chance. I'm not even close.
Yeah. It was just like, oh man. So I mean, but those guys were quick and they were all dressed in like, if you can imagine, full, like dentist costumes.
Yes.
So one guy's dressed in like scrubs.
Yeah. One guy
was a dentist. So he's in scrubs. Then you've got like a guy dressed as a tooth. Somebody is like toothpaste and somebody is a toothbrush.
Yes.
So these guys were stacked.
They were moving.
Yeah. So
absolutely.
They come flying through. I go sprinting over, grab my beer. I felt like I did not have a terrific chug. I was like, I was so in my head about it. I think the can got me.
It just psyched you out.
It psyched me out a little bit, and I was just, I don't know.
Because when we got to the chug, you could grab a non-alcoholic one or like a regular, like a fat tire.
I went with a fat tire.
Yeah, I went for the real one.
I was like, that
feels like more in the spirit.
That was what I thought too. Yeah. I was like, okay, you know, I mean, like I said, you know, training's one thing, but like game day, it's like, you know, you gotta.
Exactly.
Yeah. So then, you know, take off. And I could not get any traction with my shoes. So I was just like, I feel like I'm like a clown, just like literally like slipping the whole way through, like banana peels.
Oh gosh.
Nonstop. So I'm just trying to hold on to, I think, third. I think a guy passed me on the chug, and then he just sort of stayed like equal distance in front of me like for the whole lap. But I came sprinting around the bottom turn. You come flying down this hill after all these like switchbacks, and then there is just a hard sharp turn.
Yes.
And it's like off camber, so it's almost like you're doing like a sharp turn, but the way the hill is shaped is like working against you.
Yeah, it's like you're running around like the bottom of a cone.
Yeah, exactly. And so I went to I went to turn, and basically all my forward momentum was like, nope. And so my legs just came clean out from underneath me, which is where like the entire cheering section, like several like little colonels had like come out to like, you know, be a part of the event. Like our good friend Big Steve was there, you know, our wives and our mom, yep. And you know, like everyone.
I got a great view of you just wiping out.
Just wiping out, which also meant that, you know, the crew here at SCB, they were out there watching, you know, they had signs and stuff like that, which was so sweet. But so then everybody was like right in the spot where I fell.
Yeah.
But
we got video.
We got video. So we'll play that as I'm telling the story for watching on YouTube. But anyway, yeah. So yeah, came ripping around the corner. I feel like I got up pretty quick though, and you know, was able to like go through and tag John, who quite frankly was our
absolute ace of the hole for sure.
There's a reason he was running anchor, because he is probably the fastest chugger and runner. And it showed.
Yeah. He was moving. I feel like everyone else looked like, okay, they're running. And John looked like he was running fast.
Yes. He was gaining ground on everybody very quickly, but, the dentist, the legion of the dentists could not be slowed.
Yeah.
So they did come across the line first.
They did.
But we came across the line second.
We did. We were in second.
We'll take it.
Yes.
Oh my gosh. It was so funny though, because like I saw them come over and they were like putting the medals on like the first place people, and I was like, all right, second place medals. Anyway, I did medals for first place.
Only did medals for first place. I was like, what? Come on, man.
Oh man.
Yeah, so that was a bummer. We didn't get any medals.
No medals. Yeah, that's okay though. That's okay. But, you know, but they did give us another free beer afterwards, which was
free beer.
Yeah, so I mean, that counts for something.
That's not too bad.
Yeah, it's aluminum metal.
Yeah.
But no, yeah. So huge shout out to just like everybody who came, you know, and was cheering us on and stuff like that. It was so much fun. It was like I couldn't believe we had like a whole cheering section. And stuff.
Oh man, yeah, we absolutely had the biggest cheering section. That's we did. For sure.
Yeah.
So. I mean, like John's extended family was there, and they'd made signs for him, and the people at the office had made some, and yeah, like you had some little colonels in town who I think you're wearing. They made shirts for us. They were all in matching shirts as well.
Yes, which I'm now wearing right now. It's got like a really cool like a GMA sticker on it that's sort of like peeling off, and it's like, oh yeah, and it says go GMA on it.
So yeah, it does.
It's pretty perfect. It's pretty perfect.
Yeah, pretty good.
Yeah, but so it came, it went, we did it. How do you feel?
I felt great. It was super fun. Like the course was hard. For sure.
It was definitely hard.
Yeah. But it's like, I wasn't ever like, you know, I wasn't running it thinking like, oh man, I can't, you know, I can't do it or anything.
Right.
It was like, it was hard, but then it was also, it made it feel like I didn't feel like I could go much harder. You know, I was like, I'm going as hard as I can right now. And it's very uphill. And very like precarious footing for a good portion of it. So I felt like I did as good as I could.
I know. Yeah. I would say the only thing that was tough for me was I felt like I didn't get to like, I feel like I have like some top end speed that I didn't get to use at all.
Yeah. There's not any like just long flat sections, almost at all, and none where the footing is good.
Yes. Yeah. No. Yeah. None. Not, I would say there wasn't any. Like best case scenario, you could pick up some speed on like the one downhill. But if you could imagine, like, you know, 400 meters of it, of quarter mile that you needed to run, I feel like 350 of it were oriented uphill, and like the last 50 meters featured a very steep downhill and then stairs downhill.
Well, and you couldn't even pick up that much speed going down the hill because the downhill was leading into another U-turn.
Yeah,
which was on that like angled cone shaped like footing again.
Right.
So like if you came down too fast, your momentum was gonna like carry you into like the wall of the curve, which would have been a wall of people.
Yes.
That's where they were like standing to like cheer and stuff. So you kind of had to like slow down so you could take the turn at all.
Right. Yeah. So it was so difficult. So our six minute goal was basically out the window.
Yeah.
But I feel like we did it like in like what, like 8:50?
I think, yeah, it was like it was somewhere in the 8 minute range.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
But that was fun too. And I really liked the whole setup because like if you were like sitting in the amphitheater facing the stage, you could very easily just watch people run the whole loop around you.
Yeah.
It was very good spectating.
Yeah. And I suspect that that's what they were going for, was it was kind of like, if you're looking at the space and you're designing it, you're kind of like, okay, this is a great way for people to come and be sitting right in the heart of GoFest and get to see all of it from one point.
Right.
So that was pretty neat. That was pretty neat. So anyway, but it was really cool. It was such a fun experience. I would totally do it again.
Oh, absolutely. I would do it again. Cool. I feel like mentally going in, knowing what the course looks like, assuming they don't change it. Like, I feel like that helps a lot.
Oh yeah. Yeah, yeah. Definitely. Definitely. So, I mean, I literally, like, the morning we got up, I picked up like my trail running shoes and I was like, is this overkill? And I was like, it's overkill.
Yeah.
And then I got out there and I was like, oh my gosh, that would have been so perfect.
Should have brought these.
I haven't worn these shoes in like 3 years, and this would have been the day to do it.
Yeah.
You know,
I'm not even sure I still have trail running shoes. Like, I think I had them for when we were doing the Spartan races.
Those are literally
back in the day. Okay, yep,
those are the ones I have. Ones. Yeah. So that they've, I think they've been worn for 3 major events, and each of them were Spartan races.
Okay, right. Well, there you go, man. So we finished the race, and then the rest of the weekend. So the Beer Mile is like the unofficial kickoff of GoFest.
It is, yeah. So basically, because, you know, it's 6 p.m. on Friday, and like that's when people are getting off work. That's when they're starting to like filter into the festival proper. So yeah, it's like we were part of like the first piece of the GoFest puzzle.
Yes.
But then the thing for me was that I was having such a hard time getting any amount of gear together to be able to go in and experience GoFest just as an event.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh yeah. That was my big challenge, was just like getting my family and me and everybody all where we needed to be at once to do GoFest.
I do actually understand what you mean, because like the once upon a time, pre-children, me and Beth would just like wake up in the morning, and at like 10 o'clock we would show up and we'd be there all day. And we would just walk around and do the things and eat the food and check out the booths and watch the shows. And just like, that was the whole weekend. And like, once you have kids, it is such a different beast, where getting down there at all is just tricky. You're like having to park in a crowded parking lot, and lots of people are coming or going, and you're just, you know, anytime you're in a parking lot with kids, it's like, hold, stand by, you know.
yes.
Cars! There's cars coming! And then you get into the festival, there's like so many people walking around, and it's like easy to get lost, and there's 1,000 things I want to go pick up, and like Luke is very clued into like every tent probably has a free thing I can get.
Got to go get those free
stuff. I want
those
free things.
Yeah, the swag.
Yeah, I want that swag. So Luke always has like a swag bag, and he's hunting for stickers and bottle openers and whatever anyone will give him.
Does swag stand for stuff we all get?
You know, if I don't know specifically. I know that on the show The Office, Michael Scott declares those are the... That is the acronym.
That's where it comes from.
That is like, as far as I know, that's where it comes from.
Okay. Yeah, I was not aware of that particular like source material for it.
As far as I know, I thought swag was just like the name for the stuff they give away. But then on The Office, he calls it stuff we all get, swag.
Okay. I mean, it sounds like it adds up though. Okay, that's curious though.
Yeah.
Okay, so continue though.
But so yeah, so I feel like it is harder to like go and like watch all the stuff, because like not all the kids want to watch all the shows, or like there's always this big chainsaw show, which is I think mostly geared for kids.
Oh yeah, definitely.
You know, kids love chainsaws.
Yeah.
But it's very loud, and if you're not sitting near the front, it's kind of hard to see what's happening. And if you are sitting near the front, it's loud. So there's like that to contend with, or if you want to go do like the BMX show or something, which is I love watching like guys do tricks on bikes.
Oh yeah,
it's so cool.
It is,
and they're just doing it like in the middle of downtown, which is awesome too. But like, if you want to watch it, you need to get there soon enough that you're not like standing behind a bunch of people, especially if you have kids.
Dude, yes.
This is
like festival life in general though, in such an interesting way. Like, you know, like when we were doing like this same weekend last year was that music festival When We Were Young.
Yeah.
Which is the one where it's like all the kind of like punk rock emo stuff that I like listened to when I was going through high school and stuff. And it's like, it's so cool because you're like, oh my gosh, I'm going to be at this venue where like this band is playing and this band is playing and this band is playing and this band. And it's like, I had all of those CDs and like, I know like all of, you know, their songs and everything. It's going to be so cool. And then you get there and you start to realize like, well, if I'm going to see them and see it all the way through, then I'm going to have to go and be in the back for these guys. Cause I'm going to have to like run across the venue to get over there. So it's like, yes, you're in the place where they're all going to be, but like you still kind of have to play this like prioritization game. And it's like, if you want the absolute best seats for this band, then it's like, then you're going to have to probably camp out for like two sessions prior. Right. So you can like work your way to the front so that like when everybody leaves to go do their next thing, you've like found your position.
You've moved up,
but you might not want to watch those two bands. You might be missing two bands you want to see while you're, you know, trying to get.
Exactly.
Yeah. So
like,
it's
like, unless you happen to want to see all three bands that are going to be playing on this stage all day in a row.
Right.
And you're going to get there first thing in the morning, then like, you're going to have to be playing some games.
Exactly.
Yeah,
exactly. So it really does become this big, like balancing act of like, how do you make the best of this?
I know it's not unlike when you're at like Disney World and you're like, okay. Like I want to ride the big rides, but I don't want to wait in the long lines.
Right.
So how do I manage my Lightning Lane and what do I do in the meantime? Like this is when you like typically go do a bunch of rides that maybe you wouldn't even normally do, but it's what's on a short line right now.
Right.
And yeah. I'm like, I'm nearby and it's only a 20-minute wait. So I can do this now while I wait for my next Lightning Lane to open up.
Right.
Or whatever.
I know. And I feel like I'm at like a hard stage in life too, where it's like almost nothing is worth like a 2-hour wait.
Nothing is worth a 2-hour wait.
Yeah. So it's like sometimes that's the other thing too, where it's like, you know, we can go do standby for like 90 minutes and it's like, no.
Yeah.
Like, it's like I like being here, but like 90 minutes of this, like, you know, of this day, it's like, that seems like too much.
It seems like a lot of, yes. Yeah. But so like going back to like a GoFest, like the BMX show, I was like, oh, this is like a slam dunk if you've got the kids. Cause it's oh man, guys just going off ramps, doing flips on bikes. Like they're going to love that. Of course. The problem is that if the show starts at, you know, 1:00, and everyone knows it starts at 1:00, then really you got to get there like at least 12:30.
Right.
If you want to have seats or like a spot on the side, it's not seats. There's just sidewalk, you know?
Right.
If you want to
ground.
Yeah. There's just ground, asphalt. So it's not like you're going to get there and like sit down and be like, all right, everyone good. You know, let's save seats or whatever. You're just going to have to like, you know, mark your territory with your elbows or whatever and make sure no one grabs your piece of pavement. And like, if you've got the kids, either you get there early and like secure that spot, or you're standing behind people and now they can't see because they're little, which is like, of course, it's not like anyone's fault or anything. They got there ahead of time. That's just how it works. But like, the problem is if you get there at 12:30, then you have to sit there for 30 minutes on the asphalt.
Right.
And the kids are bored for 30 minutes.
Yes.
While the show isn't starting and it's loud and it's hot outside and there's people everywhere and they don't know what's about to happen and they don't care yet because it isn't happening yet. So it's like a very tricky, like threading of the needle of like, oh, like I know if it'll start and we can be here long enough, it will be fun. But like in the meantime, if they're like fussing and crying and carrying on, it's like, oh no, like we might just need to move on.
I know this is almost like where, as you get older, I feel like there's going to be like an art form to the like managing of expectations or the gamification of the like of how you optimize your day doing things like this, like where it's almost like you have to have like the kind of family culture that's like, all right, we're in it to do it.
Yeah.
It's like, we know it's like, there's going to be a 30-minute wait before BMX and we're okay with that.
We're going to be there.
Because we all agree, we want to see it. We want the best seats.
Right.
And it means that we're sacrificing a little bit. Like we might not be able to catch the end of the Chainsaw Show and see whether or not Roger wins,
right?
You know, but because we're BMX family, obviously, it goes without saying, or vice versa. I mean, you know, like don't let me assign what kind of family you are, but you know, BMX or chainsaws,
you know, right? At some point you have to make these hard decisions.
Exactly. Yeah.
So those are, it is interesting there with kids. Cause you kind of have to like constantly find the next thing for them to do that they can do that they're not going to get like too distracted while you're waiting or anything. But I think we still had a bunch of fun. The new thing that was here this year, or I think that was new this year, was the cave sim.
Yeah. So yeah. I didn't get a chance to see this, but it sounded like your family had like quite the experience with it.
A little bit, I guess. Like, it didn't stand out as anything big.
Okay.
You know, from the, it's not like it's very inconspicuous looking from the outside.
Okay.
I would say it's like half a trailer that you might like drag behind your car or something, but like they have outfitted the inside of it to like look and act like a real cave, like, you know, in the middle of the earth or whatever.
Right. So and like we've done.
And yeah.
The most alarming thing about caving is the sheer and unforgiving level of darkness.
It is. Yes. If you have never been caving, you don't really understand the dark. Like it, like you think you get it. Like the sun goes down, there's less light outside. No, it's so dark. So dark.
It is the absence of light.
If you are watching right now, you can see me holding my hand up to my face. You would not be able to perceive that hand in front of your face.
Right.
Just at all.
Yeah.
The darkness is crazy. And then it's also typically just very, very dirty and muddy and, there's sometimes like slippery rocks or whatever.
Right.
Obviously everything's made out of rock because it's a cave.
Yeah.
But
they built it that way.
They built it that way. But so this is a very small cave. It's a cave sim. It's a cave experience, but it's obviously not a real cave or anything. It's mostly made out of like foam and rubber and stuff like that.
Right.
But let me tell you what, having gone in it, I was impressed.
Yeah.
In terms of like, it gives you the sensation of being in a cave because one, it be dark in there. And two, like they gave you like a hard hat with like a light on it or whatever. And they sort of gamified it. So there was like things you could be looking for. And they had like fake stalagmites and stalactites and stuff. And like if you touched them, it would like beep. And so the goal was to like go through and not touch stuff.
Oh,
was,
like, okay, cool.
It was like the game, which isn't, you know, my kids were not interested in the game of it at all.
Sure.
And that, you know, you're on the outside and they're like, oh yeah, it's just sort of like a little play place. And I'm like, what I'm imagining is like those giant like blow up obstacle courses kind right. of
yeah.
like that's about the intensity level I was expecting inside the cave sim. I was like, this will be a fun little couple minutes here or whatever. And I mean, it is only a couple minutes, but it was way more intense than that. Like in terms of you get in there, and immediately you go down like a little thing and you're like, there's like a rope, you're trying to like climb up it on the inside. And like if you're an adult, like for me, like I'm like, you know, on my hands and knees crawling up this thing, and it's like a tight little tunnel.
Okay.
And then you get in there in the back and like there's this like little U-turn area. And so it was all three of my kids had different reactions to the cave sim.
Okay.
So Nate, he went in first, guns blazing, didn't slow down at all. I completely lost track of him. He just got out in front and kept going.
Nice.
He was fearless about the entire thing. He loved it. He came out with a giant grin on his face. Nick got in there, and at first I think he was just following Nate, and then like we got to the back and there was like a little bit of breathing room there. We could like stand up and kind of look around. And I think he looked around and was sort of just like, wait a minute, I don't think I like this. It's so dark.
Yeah.
And so he just like came back the way we came and just like exited. No problem. That was fine. And then Luke, like, he was staring at the outside of it, like at the opening tunnel, like witnessing that it became dark. And he was like, nope, not for
not
me.
For me.
Not for me. I don't think
not
so.
Today.
Not today. So all three of them. So yeah, Nate did the whole thing, loved it. Nick did half of it and turned back. Luke decided against it altogether. But so I'm in the back and Nick just takes back out the front way. And I'm like, I guess I'm going to go find Nate.
Right. Yeah, yeah, you're in it now.
No, I'm just in there in the back too. And like, we're going for, and I'm looking forward and I'm like, well, where do I go? Like, there's this place looks blocked off and that place is like kind of open over here on the bottom. And I'm looking through and I'm like, no, this is where I go. This is it. And I mean, it is like, it is a proper tight little tunnel that I'm like on my stomach, like inching forward on my elbows.
Oh my gosh.
I know. I was like, this is intense. Like, I mean, to be fair, it was very much like when we used to go caving.
I was going to say that. Like, I mean, there's a piece of me that remembers our caving days, and it's like fond memories. I think we talked a little bit last week or maybe a few weeks ago about like type one and type two fun.
Yeah.
And caving, I feel like, was the ultimate in like type two fun, where it was like, I don't know if I'm enjoying it in real time, but it sure does make for some great stories.
Yeah.
But now when I look back on some of that stuff, I'm like, it kind of gives me the heebs.
There is no
doubt. It was too tight.
There are some heebs moments. And this was like one of those where it's like, I know I'm in a trailer and so it's safe. But like, had I, you know, had we been in a real cave just out in the wild,
right?
And they'd been, and like John was like, go through there, I'd have been like, I don't know about that, dude. That's not a real tight crawl. Like,
yeah.
I don't, you know, anytime you had to crawl further than the length of your body,
yeah,
you know, where it was like, if I go through this, is there a chance I get to a spot where I won't be able to back out?
Yes.
You know,
or what, like, if the earth shifts?
What if the earth shifts? Or what if I get to the other end and my body comes out and the floor is so far away that I can't do anything? You know, it's like, like, these are like the, and it's like, it, guys, it's so dark.
People are like, shut up. Like,
so I'm like crawling through it, then I'm like, this is so tight. And I mean, I made it through no problem. It was fine. I mean, and if you, you know, like, it was really fun. I thought it was really cool. And I came out the other side and it was all great. And all that. But what was so curious to me was that afterwards, like, Luke just like, he was like clearly thinking about the cave sim, that like for the next 24 hours, like he, you know, you like, we'd go do something else. And then he would like ask a question about it. And then you'd think like, okay, we finished talking about it. Good. We got it out of your system. And like an hour later, he'd be like, but like, were there animals in the cave? Like, you know, like, no, there's no animals. Like, they said there was animals. And I was like, I didn't see any animals. And I guess there were some like plastic, like models or something.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
I didn't even notice them on my pass of it or whatever. But I think, you know, I wasn't sure. I was like, oh, were you afraid there was going to be like, you know, living animals in the cave or something?
That could be, which
I could see that would be concerning. I was like, no, it's absolutely not live animals. It's like, are there pictures of animals or just like animals? And I'm like, I didn't see any, you know. But then he was asking me all about, like, I was like, you know, oh, you know, when I was in college, you know, me and Uncle Ben and my buddies, we would go like in real caves or whatever. And he had a lot of questions about that.
Wait.
He's like, wait a minute. What? You just went in caves? And I was like, oh, yeah, we actually went camping in a cave once. He was like, you slept in a cave? And he literally did that and like slapped his hand to his forehead, like as if like, oh, no, why would you do that?
Correct,
you
know? Reaction.
Correct reaction. Not sure why we did that, other than it was so cool.
yeah
But it's like, it's one of these things, I'm like talking about it and like, we did go in like a bunch of, I'm trying to think how many we went in, at least like, there's at least like five or six.
Yeah, I was thinking like four. So yeah. I mean, you may have done might a have couple been, more that I didn't do.
There might have been, yeah, I think the very first time we went, me and Mike and John just went to one that famously had a place called Glop Canyon in it. I don't think you were a part of the Glop Canyon trip.
Okay.
Yeah. Where I almost lost a shoe.
Man.
If you can imagine.
The casualties. I can't imagine coming out of a cave not wearing a shoe. It's like, because whatever that walk you have left to get out of there would be miserable.
It's fascinating to me at all the caves you go in. Like, John, this is the thing. It's like, one, like me and Beth were talking about it, because I was like, she was like, you know, like, I was saying, like, I always remember that John would like look up the maps and he just is like really good at reading them and like visually constructing like the whole cave in his head beforehand.
He's a literal architect.
Yeah.
So if there was anybody who had a predisposition to this particular skill, it might be him.
Yeah. And I mean, he was super good at this particular thing. And it's like, I don't think I would go caving without John or another educated guide. Like, I'm not someone who just goes exploring rogue caves or anything.
What's alarming to me is that we were doing this like when we were like 15, 16 years old.
Mm-hmm.
So it was kind of like, it's like when we were going, our guide was our sophomore aged high school friend.
Yeah, maybe a little older than that. But not much.
Maybe junior age.
Yeah, maybe.
But I mean, I don't think it's a reach to say he had to be senior aged.
I mean, it was.
Even that's not a lot
it's
better.
It's not that much better. And yet I never felt like John didn't know where he was going.
Oh, no, I trusted him 1,000%.
1,000%. I knew he knew where he was going. And, you know, he's at least safe and conscious enough to not just like abandon you in the dark.
Oh, for sure. So. Yeah, yeah. No, I always trust the John. It's just, yeah. It's just funny to think about, like, with no other context, they'd be like, don't do that.
Don't do that. And I mean, because we would go to at least one of them had like a water exit. Were you there for that one?
Where you have to like walk out and like almost like tip your head up. So uh-huh. you could breathe the air above while
correct.
You,
yes. Yeah, yeah. Yes. There was one, if you can imagine, I'm like 6 foot one. Okay. And this particular one of the caves we went to, you had to like walk through water to get to the exit. And you're walking in it and you can't see the bottom of the cave because it's water.
Yeah.
And it's just kind of getting deeper. And as you're walking forward, not only is it getting deeper, but the roof is getting shallower, you know, or right. getting closer to your head. So eventually you're sort of walking in a space that is about, I don't know, 6 foot 7 inches tall, you know, so there's like maybe 6 inches above my head,
right.
if that. And the water is up to like 5'11", you know, yeah. So you could like barely touch the bottom and you're kind of craning your neck and there's like a little bit of space and
it's yeah. too tight.
I know, it's like, it's too tight.
This honestly, when we went to go do our first ever Spartan race, these experiences were the things that were like ringing inside of my head because like, you know, this, like it's this idea, this like, ooh, rah, like very intense, you know, like obstacle course racing challenge competition. And like,
yeah.
we were going out there with like tons of people from like the Super Carlin Brothers community. And, you know, so everybody's got varying levels of experience, including ourselves. And part of me is almost in my head thinking like, they're going to have us go through like underground tubes with water mostly filled to the surface, and like what if somebody sloshes and then you all of a sudden panic and you're
right,
underground.
Yeah.
Like I was, once I got out there, I was like, okay, our high school life prepared me
for this.
Yeah. Yeah. Like it's like if it did nothing else, it made it so that what is supposed to be advertised as like extreme, it doesn't feel that extreme by comparison.
Right.
It was like, okay.
I know.
We're all right.
Yeah. We did some silly things. But so yeah, I was regaling Luke with all of my caving tales.
Oh, I bet he was loving that.
Well, I mean, it was hard to tell. I was like, I don't know if I'm scaring him or making him braver. And it's like, what is like, like we did it and I have such good memories of it and it was super fun and we did, you know, thankfully everyone was, you know, no one ever got like hurt or anything like that. We all made it out okay.
We did.
And stuff like that. But like, it's like, like would I want my own kids doing it? And I'm like, probably not.
How about if they know? Had a sophomore / junior age tour guide?
I know.
Like, see?
I'm like, do I trust that kid? Right. I don't know, but we did it. Obviously, we're okay.
Popcorn Culture is sponsored by Shopify. Yo, when we first started making content online, I remember the very first time somebody left a comment asking where they could buy our merch. It was a wild moment, almost like a rite of passage. I was on cloud 9 until I realized I had to find a way to make that possible. And that's where Shopify steps in. Shopify made it so easy to take that comment to heart and put our first t-shirts online available for, you know, that one person that wanted it. Now, years later, we rely on Shopify every day and have a whole lineup of products from coffee to candles and, of course, t-shirts. And while we always love the comments letting us know what y'all want, Shopify makes it easy to know what y'all are actually loving. So upgrade your business and get the same checkout that we use with Shopify. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/poppop. That's all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/poppop to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/poppop.
Popcorn Culture is sponsored by Rosetta Stone. In the modern age, the world hasn't become physically any smaller, but we are able to get places like never before. But even with that in mind, the language barrier is always something that holds me back, even if I'm desperate to go new places. And that's where Rosetta Stone steps in. They are the most trusted language learning program immersing you in the language you want to learn, and it's available on both desktop and as an app. We so badly want to tour the world so we can meet listeners from all over, and to do that, we need to be able to get by wherever we go. And Rosetta Stone makes that challenge approachable. With fast language acquisition, they immerse you in an intuitive process that guides you to pick up things naturally, first with words, then phrases, and then sentences. Plus, they offer over 25 languages and 50% off for a lifetime membership. Learn anytime, anywhere with Rosetta Stone's mobile app, and don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started, and Popcorn Culture listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/today. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/today today. Popcorn Culture is sponsored by Fiji Water. Y'all, I have been having one heck of an amazing summer. Lake days on the boat have been some of the best of my life. And on those hot days, I love to keep Fiji Water on hand to keep my family and myself hydrated and refreshed. It really is from the islands of Fiji. Drop by drop, Fiji Water collects in a sustainable ancient artesian aquifer 1,600 miles away from the nearest continent, protected and preserved naturally from external elements. And as the water filters through volcanic rock, it collects a unique profile of electrolytes and minerals, resulting in more than double the electrolytes as the other two top premium bottled water brands, giving Fiji Water its soft, smooth taste. And unlike some other premium bottled waters, Fiji Water's electrolytes are 100% naturally occurring, and this water even has a perfectly balanced pH of 7.7, and because I'm a complete aquarium nerd, I tested this with some of my pH test kits and can tell you, confirmed. Fiji Water really is Earth's finest water. So get stocked up on Fiji Water this summer and visit your local retailer to pick some up for your next backyard party, beach or pool day, hike, or even your home office. It's not just water, it's Fiji Water. Here's the thing. So it's like, it's fascinating. It's fascinating to me because when we were growing up, I feel like our dad had a lot of like eclectic interests, you know, the things like water skiing, or, you know, he brought us for the first time, like, you know, jumping off the cliffs in Vermont, mm-hmm. and, you know, we would do like winter skiing and stuff like that. So like, you know, we were always kind of like going and being involved in these, you know, these activities and such. And for the most part, as a kid, it was like, I so oftentimes found myself in like almost feeling like I was in over my head. Like I liked watching it. I thought it was really cool, but it was almost like, I'm not ready for right. that. Like, mm-hmm. and so I think I was very timid for a really long time.
Yeah.
And it was, I think at some point for me, and this is the case, I think, that applies to so many other situations, is that it's almost like you have to make the decision for yourself that like you want to do it for you versus doing it like on behalf of somebody else or like yeah. under pressure or whatever. So like, it's curious to me, like the way that like Luke responded to this particular cave situation, because like, it seems to me like his interest was certainly piqued by it. You know, he was certainly like, this is interesting. I want to be the kind of person who does it.
Yeah.
I'm not ready to do it, but I have questions. I want to know more.
Yeah.
Dad, tell me your experiences. Like, what do I need to know? And it's almost like it's like all feeding into this like machine that I feel like is going to like re-manifest like 12 years from now.
Oh, I know. I'm like, so, cause, well, we went to so the next day, like, we went back and we were picking up like my car from downtown. And I was like, Luke, do you want to go try it again? You know,
yeah,
because, like, you know, we're going to be back down there. So otherwise we might have to wait until like next year or anything to try it. And he, you know, because he'd been asking me questions the whole time. And he was like, I was like, why don't we just walk over there and we'll wait in line. And, you know, you can tell me if you want to do it or whatever. And he's like, okay. And so we walk over there. And sure enough, like, we wait in line. And like, they have this little box outside of it, which is like, it's like adjustable in height, but basically it's like a tight crawl through the box, basically, but you're never like outside of the sunlight or anything.
Okay.
So you can just sort of like see, this is what it's like going through a tight spot.
Okay.
Or whatever. And I was like, here, can you like, you know, oh, can you try that? And he went, you know, right through it. No problem. I'm like, okay. So that is like tighter than anything you'll have to do inside there.
Okay.
Or whatever. And I was like, you know, trying to get them all hyped up on that. And then, There was actually like, there was this little kid in front of us named Remy, and I guess he had been doing like laps through it or whatever. And he turns around and is like, "Do you want me to show you how to go through it?" And he was being like such a good little like friend, being so helpful. I was like, "Oh my gosh, this kid is going to like save the day." But ultimately we got up there and Luca, he made it about like 5 feet in, and then that was about as far as he got
on
round two. And he decided, nope, not for me, not yet. But then it's like, you know, so we turned around and, like we said goodbye to the cave sim for this year.
Okay.
But then like, even like a few hours later, he was like, "Can we just go try again?" You know,
which see,
I
yeah,
know, it's like he could tell he like really, really wanted to be able to do it.
Like the hooks are in his brain.
Yeah. He's like, he was thinking about it. And like, we even went home and we've got these like big felt magnetile things.
Yeah.
And so he was like, you know, can we build a cave? You know, so we like built a cave at the house, which is like a big tunnel, basically.
Sure, sure.
But, you know, he was, you know, wanting to practice or whatever. So it was so interesting to see him like try and work it out. And like, we talked afterwards and it was like, it's okay that you didn't do it. You know, like really what we learned about was like, you know, like bravery and courage. And, you know, the next time you're feeling scared, you can think back to this. Cause he would be like, "I just didn't think about like what it would be like when I was in there. I was just thinking about," you know, it was like, he was thinking about the other thing, you know, he was trying to explain like how the things he hadn't thought about.
Okay.
In terms of it, he was like, "I was just thinking about like the darkness and like the whatever, but I wasn't thinking about like what it would be like when I was in there." And he's like, "You know, I just want to do it again." So it was just like, okay, well, you know, this is what we learned about. And now the next time you feel scared, you can try and remember this. And he seemed like, okay, yeah, that's good. So
that's great. Oh, so, I mean, it feels like
hopefully we took something away. Yeah.
No, yeah. It sounds like a major learning experience.
It was. It felt like I was at a real like parenting moment here.
Yes. Yes. I mean, that they could totally be like a formative situation that sort of like comes back down the line because when I think about growing up, like it was so often the case to me that I feel like, you know, we would go like skiing for the winter and like, you just seemed so like on board with it. Like no issues whatsoever. You kind of knew what to do. You sort of knew the slopes. Like same thing as like John, like knowing like the interior of like the cave and like, oh yeah, like if you take this lift, it takes you back up to that or whatever. It's like, you never really seemed like have any sweat about it. And is that accurate?
Well, I mean, I guess a little. I remember like forever when we would go skiing, you know, we were just like, we would go up to snowshoe and there would be like the little bunny slope skitter or whatever. And anytime you did the lessons, that's all they would take you on.
Right.
You know? Yeah. And I remember one year though, we were up there and like dad's boss was there as well. And he was there with all of his kids, some of whom were our age. And I'd been doing just a little bunny slope because that's like all I'd ever really done.
Okay.
And, you know, I was like by myself out there. And one of the girls was like, "Oh, do you want to go do this one?" And I was like, okay. And I just like followed her down one of the other slopes. And it was like much bigger, much longer, much faster. It was like, I got to the bottom of it. And it was one of those, it was like, I can't say no.
I
guess I'll be following you and doing this. And then I got to the bottom and it was like, oh, maybe I could do more than just that one.
Okay.
But it was like one of those, it was like, my hand sort of had to be forced in the moment. Like I wasn't just going to be like, yeah, I'll just go do this one.
Right.
So I remember just, yeah, doing that and then feeling more confident after that.
Okay. Well, so, cause, I mean, that was like my experience when I was a kid was more like I would know that we'd be going skiing that weekend. And this is like when I feel like I should have like realized that like what I had was like anxiety as a kid, because I would stop sleeping.
Oh, no.
For that week.
Wow.
You know, I would have like nightmares about it. I'd be worried about it. I was like so preoccupied. I couldn't think about anything else other than the fact that we were going to go, because it almost always meant that I was going to be like cold and uncomfortable and alone and falling and hurting and sore.
Skiing.
Yes.
Fun.
And it was like one of these things where it was like, I so badly want to be better at it and I'm just not, you know? And it was just like, you know, it was such a struggle. It was such a worry. But then like, I think for me, like the big thing, like this is what makes me curious about like what the outlook will be like for Luke is it's like, if you were mom and dad looking at me, you would not have thought like this kid this is going to be one of his favorite hobbies when he's an adult.
Right.
Like, you know, you wouldn't be like, he's a natural. He picked it up right away. He's flawless at it. You know, like none of those things would have been descriptors of who I was on my snowboard as like, you know, an 8-year-old. And then, you know, fast forward to being in college, I remember like at some point in time, it like just like clicked for me where I was like, I really need to learn and like to go and be confident, because if someday I want to like bring my kids to do this, I'm going to need to know how to do it.
Yeah.
And I never got like the confidence down back then. And so it was sort of that like decision to go out and like, you know, buy all the gear to go and do this thing where most of my experiences had largely been miserable.
Mm-hmm.
And then it was sort of like it recontextualized everything. And it was like, okay, now I sort of love this.
Yeah.
Now I'm sort of like on my terms and I'm like figuring it out. Like I'm getting the hang of it and, you know, I'm going all the time. I'm getting better at it. And like, before you know it, I was like, man, I can't wait to go again.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. I feel like my experience with it growing up was that it was something that like once I felt better doing it and I would like have a lot of fun doing it, it was one of those things. It reminds me of like the Pokemon cards where it would just sort of like, you know, like when I was a kid, I liked the collecting aspect of it, but I never had like the opportunity to like play with other people because just no one wanted to play.
Right. Like actually like harness your skills a little bit.
Yeah, harness your skills and like try and build the decks and things like that. Like that was interesting to me, but not any of my friends. And it was like, this was like a little bit different, but it was like, it created like the same like unavailability space, you know?
Okay.
It's like a thing I really want to do, but like I don't have the means to do it.
Yes.
Almost at all. And like we never, you know, it's like the only way I get to go skiing is if it's with a family trip. And like even then it's like I don't have my own skis, so I'm always having to like rent, and like I didn't have like a lot of money or anything, so it wasn't like I could, you know, even if people like invited me, it was like, well, that means I'm going to have to like spend a lot of money on a lift ticket and spend a lot of money on renting the skis.
Yeah. It's not a cheap sport. That's for sure.
Yeah. Like it's not. So it was like something I always wanted to be able to do like whenever I wanted to, but I just never like could.
Right.
But then it's like one of those things where it's like, maybe it's like the grass is just always greener on the other side or whatever. It just seemed like my friends just had all the, like they could just go.
Yeah.
They would be there a lot. You know, it'd be like, how
are you doing this?
How are you able to go so much? Right. So that would always be like frustrating to me. But eventually, like some of the first stuff I bought after I got my real job at the concert venue,
nice,
was like a bunch of ski gear and my own skis. And I would, you know, then I would go all the time.
Yes. We went a ton, but yeah, you're right too. Yeah. It's like, it's interesting, like to need, that like opportunity to start like making those decisions to like get to go and do it. But it's also fascinating to me to like, what are the activities that like we had growing up, because this is such a good example of one where it was almost just like, as soon as I can like do it, I will, you know. But it's like, but you're talking about like realistically from the time I got on the snowboard for the first time, I think when I was 8, until I went for the first time by myself when I was 19, you know, it's like, it took me like 11 years of waiting for that day to finally get to go.
Right.
And then from there, the quest basically became like, how do I make it so that like everyone I know will go with me? Because like then you've tackled the task of just simply getting there, but then you have to find, it's like, then you don't want to just like drive,
you want to go by yourself
2 hours into the middle of West Virginia by yourself every weekend. So then you're like, well, now I need people who will go.
Yeah.
And then if people haven't learned, then like not
then
many people
be
are
like on your level too.
Exactly. So I feel like for a while there, like when I was in high school, the big thing was always Diablo 2. So that was always like the game that like I wanted people, it was fun to play it and I really enjoyed playing it. But like what makes it the most fun is when you've got like a group of people, you know, who are also playing it. You're all sort of like in it together. And that was so difficult. So like my standing offer to everyone whenever I was in high school was, if you'll play with me, I will buy you the game.
Right.
And like no questions asked. Like, you know, like let's try it.
Let's go.
And so I feel like when I got to college, I mean, you couldn't exactly just, you know, Diablo 2, when I was doing this for people, cost $20 for the battle chest.
Right. Yeah.
You know, at Walmart or whatever. But like, you couldn't just go and like buy people skis. because they're so expensive.
They're very expensive.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it was just like, but I remember it was like, I would do anything I could to be like, what would make it any easier for it to go? Like, I have 16 spare dollars. Does that help?
Does that help? You want to come?
Yeah.
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 You want to go skiing?
So anyway, it was such a quest for such a long period of time for an activity that I genuinely think I like had a rooted fear in as a child.
Did you ever go on like the Boy Scout ski trips at all?
I did not. No. I think I missed that wave entirely.
Okay. That was probably another like part of my skiing development, I think.
Okay.
Is that there would be these like Boy Scout trips where they would take like the whole troop up to, you know, a ski resort for like the weekend or whatever, or maybe it felt like you'd be there for at least two full days or whatever. And that I think was always really good, like confidence building wise, like because we'd done some stuff as like little kids, then you'd get there and like you'd have this like wide range of skills or whatever. Right. So, you know, if you were there with your friends who were like about the same as you, you could go do stuff, but there would be some people who were learning and who like, you know, had to do like some of the easier stuff.
Right.
And I think like that was like a real like confidence boost, like, oh, I can do this, you know, look at me, I'm able to excel at this a little bit more.
Yes. I mean, yeah. it's also like one of those things where even if you get to like help someone else who's like learning, sometimes the best way to master anything is by teaching another person how to do it.
Yeah.
Not only because I think like then you are forced to think about what you're doing and how it's all working, but it also gives you that confidence of like getting to be like a mentor to someone else.
Yeah.
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 I think that can be such a vital experience for really any skill. Yeah. So like, I feel like we've said like skiing, like we've spotlighted on that, but that this is a more broad strokes conversation about just insert activity here.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
Because that exists. Mm-hmm. Anyway, we got a transition left in us.
Sure.
Okay, Jay, you have a note here in the show notes that says, should I get a flamethrower?
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, tell me more.
All right. Well, this is really not a whole lot to it. This was like there was a joke this morning out of the office where someone was talking about flamethrowers, and I was like, I was just thinking about getting a flamethrower this morning. And I think everyone thought I was joking, but I was not.
You were not joking.
I don't know if flamethrower is the right word.
Blowtorch?
No, more than a blowtorch. More like a what's the word? It's like a
flamethrower?
Like a weed flamer, or I guess. You know what I'm talking about?
Okay.
No, maybe.
It sounds like drugs.
It's not, man. It's way cooler.
A weed flamer.
Weed flaming? I don't know what it's called.
I do think I know what you're talking about. Is it like, because I think I've seen before people have like a long handle that sort of has, it almost looks like an upside down like soup can at the bottom.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you attach it to like a propane tank.
Yep.
And you sort of go through and it's creating like a small fiery inferno down on the end. But by comparison to like flamethrower from like Star Wars or video games or something,
yes.
You don't mean like a flamethrower.
I don't mean like a military grade flamethrower.
Okay.
I mean, yeah, basically like something you would use in your garden.
Okay. So way cooler
to like basically burn off the weeds,
okay,
as it were. So basically I was just watching the thing I've been considering planting here in October, because this is when you're supposed to plant it, is garlic.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. But my garden is mostly weeds at the moment.
Sure.
Because I just lost the battle hard.
Okay.
And I was like, part of me is like, I want to do the garlic, but oh my gosh, like, is it worth going out there next weekend and spending hours getting rid of the weeds so I can plant garlic, a crop that is readily available at the store and pretty cheap?
Now,
on the other hand, the big upside to the garlic is that it's apparently a really good pest deterrent.
Yeah.
Because the deers and the rabbits do not like the smell. So my main goal in growing the garlic is not even necessarily harvesting the garlic.
It's just to be smelly
to avoid things. And you plant it in October and then you like harvest it in the spring or summer or whenever you feel like it, you know, You just leave it down there. As far as I'm concerned.
It just does its thing. Just as does needed. Its thing.
It's not going anywhere, you know. So just let it smell as long as you want and deter all the animals and, you know, pick it as needed. I guess if you need another clove for the kitchen or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah. That would be pretty neat. I bet homegrown garlic is better.
I'm certainly it's gotta be better.
Yeah.
It's like, I guess it is very much a food that takes on a lot of its flavor is dependent on its dirt.
Oh, a lot. You got to have good dirt.
I guess you got to have good dirt.
Okay. So, I mean, as much as you've talked this season about your unfortunately failed harvest,
yeah.
I feel like you almost are like contractually obligated to plant said garlic.
Well, I think, I got to plant the garlic. And then, so this morning though, I was watching just like a TikTok about someone who was like, it's time to plant garlic. And I was like, ooh, these would probably be some good tips in here about how to do it. And it was a very informative video, but in the video, the guy was just using like B-roll of himself, like flame weeding his garden. And I was like, what the heck was that? You know, that seemed like really intense or maybe really awesome.
Do I need one?
Do I need one of those? Would that be really good for me? And I'm like, I don't know if it actually would be the solution. It seems like it's like tremendous at getting rid of like, you know, sidewalk weeds and stuff, or I don't know, maybe if you were out there all the time doing it. I'm not sure it's exactly what I need, but I was certainly considering it this morning because I think it would also just be fun.
Yeah, I mean,
you'll light stuff on fire, you know. granted the fence around my yard at the moment is made of relatively flimsy plastic and wood. So
it's like, how did you burn down your fence?
Well, here's nothing. Here's the thing. Flamethrower?
Yeah. What does the homeowners association say about flamethrower usage in backyard gardens?
Well, I think you could get away with this little soup can propane tank.
I think you're right.
Thing, no problem. And I feel like it would probably be effective to some degree.
I bet it would.
Yeah.
I bet it would. I think that there would be results. Is there any I'm trying to think if there's like any other way to mass remove all of said
I mean, the other way would be to first just go hand pull all the really big stuff out and then just have like a rototiller and just, you know,
go
churn it up.
Go ham.
Churn it up and rake off everything that comes up out of the bottom.
Okay.
That would be my other option, I suppose.
Okay.
And then plant down the garlic.
I gotcha.
Just go for the best. Or just really, you know, one-to-one it, and that would really take forever.
Okay.
And it's, I don't know about that. So. But
I mean, the flamethrower idea seems like a hootin' and holler.
It does seem like fun though, doesn't it? So it seems like the most fun version of this.
Right, yeah. So I feel like for anybody who is eventually scrolling through the episodes of The Pop, it's going to be like, should I get a flamethrower? I got a flamethrower.
Right.
As like it feels like that's going to have to be two separate titles.
Yeah. Almost certainly this one's called Should I Get a Flamethrower?
Yes. To which people have gotten through like the first hour of the episode being like, why is it called Should I Get a Flamethrower?
You know, you got to wait around to the end to find out these things. And they'll be like, oh, it's for gardening. Should have known.
I know. Yeah, that's
someone's
it.
Someone's trying
to
plant their garlic. The other thing, just is if we're going to be talking gardens, is that I've been... we did the pumpkins last week, so I've been slowly getting my pumpkin seeds ready to plant for next year as well from the pumpkins.
So you're going to plant your own pumpkins?
Well,
P-Y-O-P.
That's right. I guess so. That's my, at least we'll have, a part of me wants to do it just because I've gone through so much effort to collect the seeds.
Sure.
Which is way more than just get seeds, put in envelope, wait. Like, apparently you got to like get them out and then you have to like soak them in water for like a week so they can germinate. And then you scoop out anything that's still floating because those seeds are just basically duds.
Oh,
everything that sank to the bottom, those are the good seeds.
Okay.
And then you got to dry those seeds out for like a week and then you can store them in like a, you know, then in an envelope and then you can plant them for the next 4 years. So,
well, if it makes you feel any better, I threw mine on my compost heap after they melted in my front driveway once upon a time. And we had like 200 yards of pumpkin vines.
Yeah. All my other pumpkin guts, many seeds made its way into.
Yeah.
I also threw that into my compost heap. So part of me is like, boy, I'm going to use this compost next year and there could be some pumpkins.
Yeah, I would almost be willing to bet beyond a shadow of a doubt that there will be pumpkins.
I know. I'm like, that could be a problem in and of itself.
Yep.
Unless I'm trying to grow the pumpkins.
So, yeah, I know. Then next thing you know.
I know. So anyway, I may or may not be planting garlic this weekend and may or may not have a flamethrower to do it.
Amazing. Amazing, amazing.
If you're like bored on Saturday and you want to come like, you know.
Well, let me just tell you off the cuff. Yeah. Not no.
Not no.
Not no.
Not no. Not no.
Looking, right? looking forward to flamethrower Saturday.
Exactly. Exactly, Ben.
It sounds like a blast.
It's good. I know. I knew you'd be interested.
Obviously.
I know. I was watching this, I was like, that guy's got to be going overboard with this thing. Like, he owns it for some other purpose. And it's like, nope, that's what it's for.
That's what it's for. Yeah. I know. No, this is so great. Cause I do love a specialty tool.
Yeah.
Especially one that combines like unusual, mechanisms, mm-hmm. such as, flames.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Then I also have just a big weed bed out in my front too. We could also just scorch.
Just torch it.
Just torch it, man.
What could go wrong?
Fire.
Yeah
that's what I have. Hoses that we can just have on the ready,
yeah,
in the event of such problems.
I'm not gonna lie to you, there is also a piece of me that has always wanted to use a fire extinguisher. Like, I don't want to at all,
right?
Because like, obviously it means that something like dangerful that has happened. However it does seem like it would be like a thrilling experience,
yeah,
to get to like pull the pin and be like, this is happening.
Let's
right
go.
Now. Yeah. I got this little like black hose thing.
It feels like, you know, there's like those rooms where you can go in with a bat and they just let you like break stuff.
Yes.
It seems like there must be somewhere where it's just like a really flame retardant room, except they've got some stuff they can light on fire and you're wearing like, you know, fireman gear and you've got a flame extinguisher and it's just like, hey, just go ham in there, man.
Just go have
just
fun.
Just put it down. Just, you know what? Worst case scenario, we got the sprinkler system on the top. You're going to be fine.
I like it.
You know, I'm sure that sounds like a sound business plan.
Right, right.
Constantly almost lighting people on fire.
It's like every insurance agency in the world is like, no.
No.
You are not doing this.
We will
this.
Not be doing
this
that.
This is an unacceptable plan.
They'll be like, no, no. Look, it's going to be great. People always want to use fire extinguishers, but they don't get to.
Right.
You know? It's like this, it looks so fun, but people get to do it. And now they get to do it. And we can have like fun things to light on fire in there.
It's good practice.
You know, there could be like popcorn kernels and that's like kind of whimsical, you know, they're blowing the it's just popping and they got to blow it out. Yeah.
All right. I'm looking forward to this.
Yeah. Right.
Let me know when you open.
Yeah.
All right, guys. Thank you so much for tuning in. As always, I do have a special announcement here at the end of the episode, which is that we have our Q4 merch for the Patreon now ready for announcement. And that is going to be the return of the Pop Pop vinyl record.
Yes, we're going to do another vinyl record. So we will be recording an episode of Popcorn Culture that will be exclusive to this quarter's Patreon merch. It will not be available anywhere else.
Yes. So this is going to be the only way that you're going to be able to get this particular episode of the show. We'll still record every episode, so there won't be like a dropped week like that. You'll still have all your regularly scheduled
this
content.
This will just be like a bonus episode,
that can only be listened to on vinyl. We did this, I think, a couple years back now, and it's just been like one of my favorite things that we've ever done. And I was like, you know what? I want to bring the concept back. So even if you did it in the past, this would be a completely new mm-hmm. and fresh episode.
Yes.
But sometimes I wish that there was a way to have like the data based on how many people actually successfully listened to the vinyl.
Yeah.
But I feel like we'll have to find some like particularly good juicy stories that we can that only live on the vinyl record. So if you want to check that out, patreon.com/popcornculture, it's the merch tier. We super appreciate it. The support goes such a long way. This is a very, the show is very Patreon patron dependent. So huge shout out to all those people who do support us over there. If you want to go check it out, link in all the necessary places down below. Otherwise, if you have any feedback for the show, you can send it on over to popcornculturepod@gmail.com. And I think that is everything for today. Until next time,
pop pop.
Today's episode was edited by Isabel Chrisley. Vaishon Brandon does our art. Catherine Stein is our production manager. And the show is hosted by me and Jonathan Carlin.
Stop by O'Reilly Auto Parts for the power, performance, and reliability of a new SuperStart battery. Visit O'ReillyAuto.com.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Through the Gryffindor is brought to you by Wizarding Candles. Ever wish you could bring the magic of the Wizarding World right into your home? Well, now you can with our very own collection of Wizarding Candles. We work hard to make sure that these aren't just candles. We aim to offer a brand new enchanting experience each month. All of our handcrafted candles are inspired by iconic places, spells, creatures, and relics from the magical world. Whether it's the cozy scent of the burrow or the mystical aroma of the enchanted forest, our candles transport you to the heart of the magic. The fun doesn't stop there. Hidden at the bottom of every candle is a surprise charm waiting just for you. Each charm is a unique keepsake and carefully selected to match the theme of each candle. We have new scents every single month, and you can save 10% on a subscription when you sign up at wizardandcandles.com.